Welcome to the Leaf Report. This is Clark here. Hello, everybody.
James, we were not planning to do a podcast today, but there is news. Do you want to break the news that everybody listening to this already knows?
Yeah, I ordered some pizza and it's waiting for me downstairs when we're done recording. That's the news.
Where did you order it from? That's a big question.
The kids like Pizza Nova, which I know is not like the most exciting kind of pizza, okay. But when you have kids, sometimes you bow to what they want.
Okay. Well, that is not the news, obviously.
You should have known if you gave me a job to do, I was going to screw it up.
No, I thought you could handle that. So obviously the Leafs extend Morgan Rielly 8 years, $7.5 million cap hit. Let's just start there, James. Like your first reaction to this was what?
I wasn't shocked. You know, watching them play the first 8 games of the season, it's like, boy, if they don't get Rielly signed, you know, it's been, I know he probably hasn't had the greatest start either, but I think that they needed to do this. I think that the contract is okay for the first few years and problematic for the last few years. And the number was maybe a little bit higher than I was expecting. I think when you and I were talking about him getting an 8-year deal, I was saying like, what if they sign him for 6.8 or like something like just under 7 or, you know, and I think something.
I thought you said like 7.2 or something like that eventually.
Yeah. So when we did the breakdown of market value for Morgan Rielly before free agency happened, when we were talking about what is he worth, statistically, before free agency happened and before all the GMs around the league went cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs and started paying every defenseman that had 2 feet, $8 million a year. Before all that, his market value was around 7.2 over 7 or 8 years. That was in line with, you look at the contracts that, you know, like Torrey Krug was one of the best comparables for him, you know, Jared Spurgeon, you know, some of those kind of players, he was in that kind of ballpark. Mm-hmm. But then, Darnell Nurse gets $10 billion a minute and, Werenski got a big contract and
Seth Jones.
There were a bunch of them and they were wild. And ever since that happened, getting Rielly for 7 or 7.2 probably wasn't realistic.
Not if you want to keep him.
No, I mean, basically the Leafs had to decide. I mean, the three options were trade him in the middle of a season where they're trying to contend, which would have been almost impossible. If they wanted to trade him, they really would have had to do it in the offseason, which they didn't explore. I think when they didn't really look at moving him all that seriously, which is what it I can gather is what happened, then this was the most likely outcome. I know fans were worried that they were going to walk him to free agency again and let him go, but you know, there was always good faith there on the part of the Leafs and on the part of Morgan Rielly's camp, for sure. I know that they really wanted to get something done. I think that this was probably the most likely outcome, and that's the way that it went. And I mean, I think it's a perfectly reasonable debate for people to have over whether this was the right move or not. I don't want to say it reminds me of the Dion Phaneuf contract, because I don't think it's going to blow up into a turkey the way that one did so quickly, but it's kind of, I remember when that one was signed, it's like, it kind of felt like a necessary evil at the time.
Well, James, it's funny you mentioned that. I mentioned at the bottom of my story on Rielly that I just finished like an hour ago. I brought up that at that point, what management at the time said is like, part of their argument was like, how are we going to replace this guy? And that argument always like, it's a tough argument to make. And yet, as you pointed out before, you look at their defense right now and you wonder, okay, well, if you subtract Rielly.
Well, it's like.
And then you got to replace him. Like.
Didn't you say it? Muzzin looks old. Brody looks old. Sandin, Liljegren look young. Isn't that kind of.
Yeah. And Dermott's like a big question mark. Yeah. So it's like, so what do you do? Do you just say, well, like, it's almost like you just need to be very pragmatic with these things and say, like, it's not perfect. Like in an ideal world, would you sign this contract? Maybe not. But it's like, you kind of got to live in your reality. And it's like, if you don't sign him, you're going to have to sign someone else. And you mentioned all the contracts. If you're going to try to get someone in Riley's range, you're probably paying something similar for an unknown commodity. Riley is like your longest serving player, obviously. You know exactly what he is. I just don't know that there was a perfect solution to this. And maybe you just have to kind of accept that this was never going to be exactly what you wanted it to be, but the alternative is a big question mark, and that question mark could be much worse.
Well, and it's nothing to say that, you know, I know already people are looking at the cap situation for next year and how they're going to fit this in, and nothing's set in stone. Just because you've got a guy under contract does not mean, and even with, I know we got the no movement clause, even with the no movement clause, it doesn't mean there's never going to be any movement. It just means that he gets to agree to wherever he goes. But what it does mean is, yeah, I think the thing too, Jonas, is that this really solidifies the fact that the Leafs' window to be a contender and to win is really these next couple of seasons, because they're going to have a lot of guys that are making too much for their ability given their age. When you get to, you know, Tavares, Muzzin, Brody, Riley in 3 or 4 years, you know, is you know, Matthews and Nylander and Marner's contracts are going to run out in the next 3 or 4 years. Are they're probably not going to be able to bring all of those guys back, et cetera, et cetera. Like that. So the window for this core and for this group and for this management group and for the Shannon plan and everything, it's the next 2 or 3 years. Like they really need to have something to show for all of this, or it will have been a failure.
Well, and it's so difficult to look at their cap situation without knowing how this season is going to play out. Like, there's so many different ways this season could go that could determine what they do. Like, if they lose in the first round again, everyone could be gone. Like, in terms of, like, management, coaches, a new GM could come in and just trade one of those four guys. Obviously not Matthews, you wouldn't think. So, like, there's just so many ways you can go.
Can
right?
I interrupt you
so
there? Did you play around with the cap? Like, did you look at the way that it fits in next year? And because I was looking at it briefly and...
Well, I know you and I had been having this, and you sent me some version of this a while ago. Mm-hmm. And you can make it work. And, like, there are things you can do. But, like, there are so many contingencies. Like, what does Jack Campbell get? Are they going to keep Jack Campbell? If they don't keep Jack Campbell, who are they going to sign? Like... what happens with Peter Mrazek? What happens with, like, do you keep Alex Kerfoot? You know what I mean? Like, there's all these little things that change it.
So I did, like, the potato GM strategy, which just means, like, if you had a non-sentient GM that was essentially a potato shaped like a human being, and all they could do was, like, give qualifying offers to RFAs and let everybody else walk, and that's all they did, what would your team look like? The only exception I made is I did re-sign Jason Spezza, because even potato GM without a brain in his skull would decide to re-sign Jason Spezza to the league minimum. So if you just gave the qualifying offers to the RFAs, which is Engvall, Kasha, Sandin, Liljegren, et cetera, and you bring those guys mm-hmm. back at, like, I mean, they're probably going to all come back at similar numbers what they're at now. Like, I don't think that if Sandin plays on the third pair all year, he's not going to get a huge raise. If you just did that and you just kept everybody and you didn't sign any of your UFAs, they got about $2 million in cap space. That's with the Phil Kessel $1.2 million in recapture finally coming off the books. That's with the salary cap going up. It's expected the salary cap is going to go up about $1 million for next year. That buys them an extra $2.2 million, which buys them most of Riley's raise. So what do they lack in that scenario? They've got four lines of forwards. They've got seven defensemen. They only have one goalie, and it's Mrazek, and they have $1.8 million in cap space. So if they wanted to keep Jack Campbell, something would have to give, because, and I know we're going to write about it, we're going to talk about this, but Jack Campbell's going to make, you know, a substantial salary. But if you sign Jack Campbell to a big number and you find a taker for Mrazek, and you get a cheap backup goalie, you're in the ballpark of running back a very similar team to what they have right now.
Yeah, right? And, like, you can do other things. Like, if you have to, you know what I mean? Like, you could trade player
Kerfoot,
X.
Trade Richie.
Right.
You could think about trading one of the veteran defensemen if you wanted.
Yeah, well, and actually, let's talk about that. So, I wondered how much do you think the timing of this is that? Just if you were the GM of this team and you're watching this start with some of those players we mentioned, how much do you think that is part of this, that you would kind of look at your Muzzins and your Brodies and your Halls and say, like, geez, we might be thinner than we thought. Like, we gotta get Morgan Rielly done now just to kind of get something.
Yeah, I think you have to protect yourself a little bit, right? Like, I think you have to, like, let's say we go into the season another 3 months and Hall doesn't get it together and one of Brody or Muzzin doesn't, there's some real signs of decline, you got a big time problem, right? And
right.
If you look at the way, I don't know, I can't remember Brody's contract structure off the top of my head, but I know Muzzin's really well because I remember writing about that contract and it's extremely heavily front loaded. Which was easier to do before the pandemic and everything made it harder to do. Muzzin's contract, I believe once you pay the bonus in July, well, it's not July 1, it's like July 13 or something next year. When free agency opens, when you pay that bonus, I believe that Muzzin's only got something like $6 million left of a $22.5 million contract. So there's almost no money left. So I think that he would be, I know people, some people will say, well, how are you going to move that contract if he has a bad year? There's hardly any real dollars attached to it. And I believe Brody's deal is pretty front loaded as well. I just don't have that in front of me. So I think they could trade those guys. I think another team, you know, there's such a demand for defensemen, top four defensemen around the league. I think you could trade one of those guys if you wanted to. And Justin Hall, I mean, you know, you can talk about the news from practice for people that haven't seen it, but he's been brutal to start the year. And I know he had a really significant illness. Like he thought he had potentially had COVID. He was so sick. It ended up not being COVID-19. It ended up being something else, but that's affected him and he's not been very good this year. Just tell people what happened with Hall at practice and what's happening with the defense right now.
Okay. And we will get to that a little later. Basically they broke up their top four, which I wrote about, like, I think like a week and a half ago that, or maybe longer, I don't know, time is flying by, just that this was going to be something that they had to consider just because the Muzzin Hall thing wasn't working. So now they've done it where Rielly and Dermott are playing together, Muzzin and Brody are playing together, Justin Hall will be a healthy scratch on Saturday, and Rasmus Sandin will play with Timothy Liljegren. Now, I would assume like Hall will get back in for Tuesday, I believe, against Vegas. But that's obviously significant. If you're looking at this, is that inevitably where this goes now? Like, you just put yourself into a position where maybe you trade Muzzin, maybe you trade Brody.
Maybe you trade Hall.
Maybe you trade Hall. And like, I've been thinking about it, James, like the rationale to not sign Rielly because you have those guys, in some ways it doesn't really make sense. Like, those guys are a lot older. They're different skill sets. And the questions with Sandin and Dermott are what they are.
I don't think when they signed Muzzin and Brody that they were like, these guys are going to be here for the, like, we hope they're going to be here for the length of this contract. But I don't think that when they signed those, they were like, this is absolutely going to work the whole way. So they, like, I think that they knew in the back of their mind that they might need an exit plan with those guys.
Inevitably, like, if you have to, you maybe move Dermott up, maybe move Sandin up. Like, I guess you just have to see.
Are you trying to find another defenseman, like in a trade or in free agency, that you feel like can?
Well, and it feels like that might be something that they have to do this year. Like, this, what they have, what I just listed out, even if Hall takes the Liljegren spot, that's probably not good enough. So anyway, that's on the back burner. Let's talk Rielly, and then we'll take a break and talk a little bit about the new look defense. So the questions with Rielly, like you mentioned, are the back half of the contract. And obviously, defensively is kind of the big question. Do you think he does enough offensively, moving the puck, skating the puck, all that kind of stuff, all the intangible stuff, the leadership, all that other stuff, to override some of the issues that he's had defensively and that he might continue to have defensively?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think he's, at even strength, he's elite offensively, and there are some questions defensively about Rielly. And I think that, I mean, we've seen it so far this year that some of the struggles that pairing has had playing together. I was saying this to you when the deal got done. The thing that makes Rielly kind of you could either say unique or you could
weird.
Or you could say weird. Is that he's a number one defenseman, and now he's making number one defenseman money, but he's not great on the power play, and he's not great on the penalty kill, which is kind of unusual because normally a number one defenseman is, I mean, ideally they're great on both of them, and they play that. Those are the guys you talk about playing 25, 26, 27 minutes. Riley's never been a stalwart, I think, on either. And it feels like at some point Sandin's going to potentially pass him on the number one power play unit. I know they've used Riley a little bit more on penalty killing this year, and he's been fine. But the thing that would worry me with Riley is that so much of his value in the NHL is his athleticism. Like, he's just a phenomenal athlete. He's so fast. He's strong. Just that speed that he has. You know, remember when he played injured that one, was it half season or maybe it was a little bit longer than that? I'm having a hard time remembering exactly the timeline.
Yeah, that was 19, 2 years
ago. Yeah, 2 years ago. And he's much less effective when he's hurt. And so if he's 28 years old, this deal kicks in when he's 29 next year. That's problematic if he slows down at all, because his speed is such a big part of what makes him effective at even strength.
Well, and he's not like Nicholas Lidstrom was like graceful. Riley's more like, it feels more powerful.
Yep.
Does that make sense? Like, it's a different style.
He's
it's
extremely not like a strong. Like, he's not tall, but like, isn't Riley like 6 feet tall, but like 225 pounds or something? Like,
he's very thick.
He's very, he's big. You know, he's kind of built the opposite of me and you. Like, he's a lot of power to the guy.
Well, and James, like, I asked Kyle Dubas today, he talked after the signing was announced, about why he thinks like Riley can age well. And he brought up like the first or second thing he brought up was mobility. And like, you look at some of the defensemen who play a long time, some of them, like, they can play kind of more on their smarts than their mobility. Like, I'm just thinking like Ron Hainsey played forever. Not the most mobile guy, obviously.
I wonder if someone like Duncan Keith might be sort of somewhat of a comparable. Just, I was looking at Dom LeCision, our stats guru, had a chart looking at some of the comparable defensemen and the contracts, and there were a lot of them that didn't work out. Like, there was Seabrook, and there were a whole bunch of those contracts that didn't work out. But the one that did basically was Duncan Keith.
Well, that was a really long deal.
Yeah.
And it's only in like the last few, well, he's almost 40 now, that it really turned, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, like, he's been around forever now.
Here's the thing. Like, I know what the numbers say, and I've seen some of the stuff that happens during games. I do think it's gotten a little like over the top. Like, I don't think he's as huge a liability as is been portrayed.
Some of the advanced stats have him as like one of the worst defensemen in the NHL, which seems a bit aggressive given who he faces and, you know, the minutes he plays and things like that.
Well, and I just look at that playoff series last year against Montreal. Like, he was very good for the most part.
Yeah, and I don't remember
was good. Like,
yeah, and I don't remember him making big mistakes defensively or costing them.
Well, and I kind of think that's what's changed a little bit in the perception of him. Like, remember he had that huge year? We had 20 goals and 72 points. I think those were the numbers. And the last couple of years, there was that year where he was hurt, and B, like, last year especially, he just wasn't taking the chances he used to take. And obviously the team had decided like, we need to be better defensively. Mm. So he's not taking as many chances. So you're not noticing him up like to the same degree. I wonder if that plays into the perceptions of him. But I mean, if you're management, we haven't really seen them do this. Do you kind of just say like, man, like, we don't really care about the back half of the contract. Like, we might not be around. Like, we haven't really ever seen them do that. Like, they've been pretty.
You can argue though, Jonas, that the Tavares contract is that. Like, I don't know how you could like realistically argue that Tavares is going to be worth $11 million at the end of the deal they signed him to.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah but that's a little little different, just because he was a free agent. Yeah, I guess
it's similar. It's a similar idea that kind of will deal with it. It's not like David Clarkson. I'm not worried about year seven or whatever, you know. It's like, You know you're going to get value. This is the way contracts are in the NHL. I don't know if it'll ever change, or it's almost like you're likely only going to be the GM for 4 or 5 years if you're lucky, right? So you're not really worried about the back half of a lot of these contracts, which is why you end up with a lot of old guys making too much. Like, I think that the Leafs are probably going to be in a situation where it was the argument that I made with the Hyman deal as well. I would have given Hyman 7 or 8 years, and it's like, he's going to end up on LTIR, or you're going to stuff all as much money as you can in the first 3 or 4 years of the deal. And then you're going to, you know, find a spot where you can trade him to. You can always retain salary. If the cap goes up, it's going to be easier to retain. The tricky thing with someone like Tavares, I mean, he's got a no movement clause. That makes him hard to deal. And they gave Riley a no movement clause for this season and the next 6, which is, that's a lot.
Yeah, but like, so I will say on that replaceability question, it's conceivable that you could replace or try to replace Zach Hyman's production for a much lesser price. You might not get everything, but like, you might be able to get 70%.
You can see so far this season where they miss him though, right? Like,
absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. But like, maybe you can get 60%, whatever it is. With Riley, it would be harder to figure like who would you get to take those minutes and do what he does. Like, how would you do it? You know what I mean? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, it seems like right now there's a huge premium on defensemen, and you know, it's almost like what's that old adage that if with goaltending, if you have it, it's 50% of the game. If you don't have it, it's 100% or something like that. Like, I think that GMs around the league are really worried about, you look at the premium, not just for the contracts that we talked about, but like, look at the trades for like Ristolainen and like, yeah. When you get in a situation where you don't have top four defensemen that you can trust, and especially top pair guys, as a GM, you get really desperate. And that's probably the situation the Leafs would be in if they didn't have Riley, is that they'd probably be pretty desperate to find someone like him.
Well, and I sometimes think we get into this situation where you think every contract is going to be exactly what you think it should be, just because like, it's either a good contract or it's a bad contract. If it's a bad contract, you should never do it. And I just think it's not that simple. And I'm just looking, James, like as we're talking, at some of the free agent defensemen for next year. I mean, like, so John Klingberg is going to be available. What's John Klingberg getting?
A lot.
9.5?
He's going to get a lot, for sure.
9?
And I know there have been questions about him, too, about him not being as effective as he was earlier.
Chris Letang?
I mean,
he's old, so he probably doesn't really count in this discussion.
Well, but he'll probably get, like, I mean, how old's Letang?
He'll get something.
32, 33?
35.
He's 35 already.
35, apparently. Yeah, I was like, what?
But he'll probably still get, like, term and, like, a lot of dollars and, you know.
It's not a great class. Hampus Lindholm's, like, Rasmus Ristolainen.
Well, Nick Lindholm's Letty, available, like, in trade. Like, there's a lot of rumors that Lindholm's going to be on the move here to another team.
I wish I'd looked at this sooner. This is not a good group. Jeez. You would have to trade for someone.
Well, and then so
unless you're signing Klingberg, and like, that's going to cost you even more.
So then you get into the trade market, and then you're going to have to subtract from your roster, or you're going to have to subtract prospects or picks. I mean, teams are, for a player that can play in your top pair, you're probably giving up a roster player, and there's not a whole lot of places on the Leafs roster where you can subtract a quality player and not feel it right now. So I understand why people think it's an overpay. People don't like the term. I don't like the term either, but I think that what it came down to for the Leafs was they weren't going to have him. Now, I mean, I would have looked pretty long and hard at, given the way the defense market was, I would have looked pretty long and hard at trading Riley in the offseason. And I'm not sure that I don't think that the Leafs did. So they kind of put themselves in a situation where it was overpay or lose them.
Well, I always push back a little on that, because you'd have to be trading Riley for someone who's as good.
No, not necessarily. I mean, what if, I mean,
you want to get worse?
Well, you could free up cap space and you could use that.
And then do what with it?
Well, you could try,
I guess, but get better forwards. Is that like,
well, you can try and find another defenseman somewhere else.
I mean, in theory, it sounds great. It just seems more difficult than it sometimes.
Oh, I'm sure it's super difficult.
Or trade.
No,
Let's take a break, and then let's talk about the new defense and maybe take a few questions.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
All right, James, new look defense. I like, in theory, the idea of a Muzzin-Brody pair, in theory.
Muzzin has to be hurt. Like, he has to be. There's no way that he goes from being as effective as he was last year. I mean, he was really propping Hall up and making Hall a top four defenseman. And then to go to where he is this year, he has to be playing injured, which is a bit concerning. I mean, he's had a lot of injuries the last couple of years, and I've talked about it before. He's got the bionic knee braces that he wears all the time. And what was the message from Sheldon Keefe? I've been tied up with all kinds of stuff. What was the message from Sheldon Keefe about the different defense pairs, what they're looking for?
He basically said like they had to try something different. That Justin Hall has been struggling. They'll get him a break, obviously, and try to. I mean, it just wasn't good enough, was essentially what he said. Like, and defensively, they just haven't been the same. Like, you can see it night to night, just some of the chances that they're giving up. Like, I don't remember many games or many stretches of games where they gave up this many odd man opportunities. Like, that was one thing we didn't see a lot of last year.
I did a big deep dive on that last year about the midway point. And it was really specifically about not giving up the quality chances that they had the previous year. And I had some data on it. I had some video on it. I remember I asked Sheldon Keefe about it. And that was the number one focus for the coaching staff last year. And they accomplished that goal. And I don't know why it's backslid this year. I don't know why it's the same personnel on the blue line. So why would it be different?
Well, obviously, if Muzzin's playing hurt, but to your point, like, he's 32. Like, this is what happens, or this is what can happen with older players. And we saw it with Nick Foligno last year. Like, that was one of the things that seemed like it got brushed over, is like, when you trade for a guy who's 34, there's a chance he's going to get hurt, right? Like, that's what's going to happen. The Hall thing is weird. Obviously, like, you go back to the summer, I was fine with the idea of protecting him in expansion, just because like their top four was so good last year. And again, the replaceability question, how are you going to get someone for that price who could play those minutes? It's a problem. Like, if he can't do that,
protecting him looks terrible right now, because he looks like a third pair guy. He looks like a guy that played most of his career in the AHL. And so, you know, what it makes you wonder is how much of him looking like a top four D was Muzzin being as good as he was, right? Like, Muzzin's a very good defenseman.
Yeah. And if Muzzin's at 60%,
then Hall's at,
that's going to pull, yeah, right. That's going to pull Hall down. Dermott playing with Riley, they've played around with this here and there the last couple of years, nothing like substantial. What do you think of that?
So do you think that they give Muzzin and Brody like the tough assignments, and then, yes, Riley and, yeah, I like it. I think it's time to see if Dermott can play in the top four. I think that he is more ready than the other defensemen. I don't know what you're going to get out of Sandin and Logren. My guess is that Keefe's going to be afraid to play them all that much.
I guess you're playing Detroit as part of this.
Right. So,
although Detroit's been like plucky.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, Detroit, you can see the embers of, you can see what's coming there. Like, they're going to be.
But their third and fourth lines are just like,
yeah,
not good.
So what you'll see is, yeah, Muzzin and Brody will get the tough matchups, but Sandin and Liljegren are going to get the really soft matchups. Like, they'll probably get all the offensive zone starts and everything. And so Dermott's going to have to, and I think it's time to see if Dermott can do it or not too, right? Like, you know, we're talking about moving on from one of the veteran D or moving on from Hall or whatever. You feel a lot better about it if you watch Dermott play in the top four a little bit this year, and it looks like he might be able to do it.
Yeah, I guess the problem is that they're not really in a place right now where they can be experimenting. Like, well, they're in that's one game they played against Chicago where they get a win. Like, they're in a very kind of fragile position, but
they're not in a place though, Jonas, where they can like keep doing the same thing if it's not working either. Right.
Exactly. So, like, what else can you do?
I don't know if I,
like,
would even call this experimenting. I would call this like, it's logical that they change the D right now.
Yeah. And it's going to be interesting because, like, you go back to 2020, the bubble, and they have to move Dermott up, And basically, they come away from that experience saying, he can't play in the top four. Like, we're not doing that. And now, like, you're kind of forced into a situation. He's had another season. He played fine last year. He did exactly what you would hope. Obviously, he had the issue in the playoffs, the incident, whatever you want to call it. But yeah, like now you'll see if a year and a half later or whatever it is, he can handle it. It would be big for them if he could, because obviously that opens up your options a little bit.
Yep. I think it's time. I think that given the way Hall's played, that it's, you see what Dermott can handle, especially playing with your new $7.5 million defenseman.
Oh, baby. Well, I mean, how much do you think how much extra value do you think they got out of Morgan Rielly on the contract that he's on? Like, what do you think he's been worth the last few years?
Yeah, I mean, he's probably been like a $6.5 million guy, right? Low sixes, probably.
Yeah, that makes sense. All right. Do you have any questions?
There's tons of questions. So for this time, I did something differently. I put out the call for questions in our app. If you're listening and you don't have our app, you got to get the app. Okay. And the thing is, in The Athletic, you don't have to pay for everything. You got to pay for most of the good stuff. Jonah Siegel had a great interview with one-on-one with William Nylander today. I love that story. It was fantastic. And it's nice that access is starting to come back to players. If you haven't read it yet, go read Jonas one-on-one with William Nylander. It's the best interview I've ever seen with William Nylander. And I'm not just saying that because Jonas is here listening.
No, it was good.
That's the best interview I've read with William. Have you read a better interview with William Nylander?
No, I like talking to him. I think there's more there to him.
Well, he clearly was like willing to engage with you in a way that he doesn't always in media interviews. And it's a really good piece. So, all that is to say, download the app. I put out the call for questions in the app and we got 30 responses. We're not going to be able to get to all of them, but I'll try and pick out some of the best ones. Joey R. asks, will the team need to part with one of the core four before the summer of 2024 when Matthews and Nylander are UFAs in light of the new Rielly contract? Maybe. I mean, that's one thing we haven't discussed on the podcast so far, but that's an option too. I mean, if the team's not successful this year, if they either don't make the playoffs or they lose in the first round, everyone's going to expect there's a breaking up of the core four. You wouldn't trade Matthews. It would be probably very hard to trade Tavares with the no movement clause. Nylander's played well. I mean, a lot of people are going to be pointing arrows at Mitch Marner.
Can I just say though, James, like, I do not think that they think they're in that position. That may not be true, but that's,
it might not even be them.
It might not even be them.
It might be different thems that decide that. So what I was going to say is, if they do, let's not pick out who it's going to be. If they do move one of those players with a big contract, all of a sudden your cap situation is, you've got a lot of free space to decide what you're going to do with that room. So, I mean, and the thing is, you're going to get a return as well. So you could even trade one of your defensemen and one of those top four players and like really change the mix on your team pretty quickly.
Yeah, you could.
So
the only thing you worry about a little bit, James, like, they're getting a little like old. You know what I mean? Like, you look at, aside from those three guys, and I guess you want to throw Sandy. I guess, I don't know. You look at like Tavares and Muzzin and Brody and Campbell and I don't know. Anyway, maybe that's not fair.
They're like, age-wise, they're like average in the NHL right now. So, you know, most teams that are in a contending space are going to have some guys that are getting older and some young guys that are on the way up. And, you know, the Leafs need some of their prospects to kind of accelerate and come in and fill the gap. And then you'll feel better about moving on from some of the old guys that are getting older.
Well, that's a little tricky right now.
I don't have an answer to this one because I haven't really thought about it. But Nick P. asks, what are the top five contracts that Kyle Dubas has signed? And is this Rielly contract one of them?
The top contracts that he signed. I guess you'd say Hall. Obviously, that's not looking great at the moment, but like, that's a good contract. Nylander. What else? I mean, some of this is trade. Like, he trades for Campbell. That turns out to be a pretty good contract.
I mean, after last year, I would have said the Muzzin contract was a good one because he played really well last year. Brody.
Yeah, you would have said the Brody was a good Brody contract.
Too, right? So.
Well, and I'd still say Brody is.
Some of those Jason Spezza contracts look pretty good.
those are A pluses, and the bunting deal is going to be an A plus plus. Maybe.
I mean, Dubas hasn't been the GM for very long, and a lot of the team was signed when he started, and so I don't know. Contract signings have not been where you would give the highest marks to this front office.
No.
I will say diplomatically. Let's see here. Steven L. asks about Nylander playing center and Tavares playing on the wing. This is the way he phrases it. He says Nylander should get more responsibility to reach his full potential. Tavares should have less to do because he's slowing down, would make an effective kind of Dustin Brown type winger. Should they swap jobs now or later?
I mean, I put that in a story that I kind of think that that's something. I put that in stories like dating back a year. It's just, unless you're committed to it and you're committed to moving, I mean, there's not really another candidate unless you're going to move Marner to center. Unless you're committed to it, it's really tough to do that middle of the year, isn't it? Like, it would be tough to go to William Nylander right now and say, you're playing center the rest of the year. I guess you could, but it's not. I guess you could play Kerfoot with Tavera. I don't know. That doesn't seem better. Kerfoot's like not better at center. You know what I mean? They're kind of in a weird place with that.
Here's a fun one for you that I've never thought about. Philip R. says, at the last World Championships, Switzerland had its two power play units coached by a different coach. They had a battle internally, and whichever unit was hotter got more playing time. Do you think that's a model that the Leafs or NHL teams should consider? That's fun, eh?
So should Manny Malhotra get like the second unit?
maybe what you do is you disperse the talent a little bit more evenly, and like whoever can like comes up with the better scheme gets to. I don't know. It's the way the Leafs are. I you know what? At this point, nothing's fucking working with the Leafs power play. I mean, like, why not? Like, why not just do something different? Why not?
I gotta say, James, I'm not a fan of them changing up their first unit power play look already. It just wasn't enough time. Like, you can't give it. Matthews has played like five games. I just didn't think that they gave it enough of a chance. But
looked like doggy turd. So that's probably why. I mean, when like,
but was the reason it looked bad because Marner was in the bumper, and like we've seen that movie before. We'll see if this works, but it did look a little better in Chicago, to be fair.
Roland asks, is it just me or were the forwards not covering for the activating defenseman against Chicago? What was going on? Were they forgetting their assignments? It looked like a vintage version of this team, given the adjustments they made last year. I mean, I don't know.
Yes.
I don't know if you had a chance to ask Keefe about what was
going on. He brought that up.
Okay. What did he say?
Yeah, he said, like, it's not just about the defenseman. Like, our forwards haven't been good enough, and I think that's very fair.
Yeah, okay. So the forwards are, like, not covering the way that they did last year, or they're being aggressive. I remember one of the things Keefe said when I asked him about this last year was they needed the forwards to not, if there's like a 50-50 play, to make the right decision about whether or not to pursue it, because you can't always, in the offensive zone, you can't always put yourself in a position where you're going to leave yourself vulnerable all the time over and over and over again, because you're going to get burned if you play that way.
Well, and James, what's been happening? They've been struggling to score. So what's going to happen inevitably is you're going to cheat, right?
Yeah.
Man, James, like, I'm just looking at the cap-friendly cap sheet. 2030, it feels like fucking forever.
Well, it is.
2030.
Do you know how old I'm going to be in 2030? I'm going to be 50 years old.
Woo!
Do you know how old Clark's going to be? Freaking 15. Like,
getting drafted into the OHL.
Yeah, well, he started playing hockey. Oh my God. He's in the GTHL. It's been pretty interesting.
I've just never thought about 2030.
Well, dude, that's like past like when like Blade Runner was and stuff like that. Like we're going to be in flying cars and things like that by then.
Oh my God.
The new company that the Facebook guy just started is, we're all going to be living in
the metaverse.
The holographic reality of, looks like nightmare world. Alex B says, what are your thoughts on the Leafs goaltending situation going forward? Can they rely on a duo of Campbell and Mrazek for the season? I'm not convinced.
I'm not either.
It's early.
It's too early to tell. I mean, Mrazek's played two periods.
Yeah. And so Mrazek's getting the start against Detroit, which is going to be... They need Mrazek to play well. I mean, he's kind of been all over the place in his career where he's had good years and bad years and good stretches and bad stretches. And they gave him a three-year deal for 3.8. What I will say is that it's pretty interesting how good Anderson's played in Carolina. Like, he's probably been the best goalie in the NHL so far this year.
Yeah.
Not what I would have predicted. But he's been very good for my fantasy team.
Do you think he's going to have a 956 save percentage all year?
I say he does it.
Okay. That's a pretty good team, too. I was wrong. Like, I figured without Dougie Hamilton. But I guess if he's okay and, like, I don't know. They're just
No one wants to say it, but I think D'Angelo's been all right. And, like, Brendan Moore's a really good coach. And some of their other, like, Slavin and some of the other guys they got are really good players. And I like their forwards, too. Like, that's...
I do, too.
It's a smart front office, and they've built a good team there. There's a lot of questions about Riley's contract, and I feel like we have answered most of them. There are some questions about Jared McCann, which I understand that in hindsight, well, and some people said it at the time, that that move was not going to look great if Hall turns into a pumpkin. Paul W. has one here. Let's see if you can answer this, Jonas. Why do the Leafs always seem to have slow starts?
Oh, God.
I just think it's like a mental thing. Like, it's a mindset thing, and that they need to, I don't know. It's just, you feel like it, this wouldn't be the case when you're a professional athlete, but I don't know.
I feel like some of this though is like a bubble thing where you're in the Leafs bubble. So you only see the Leafs. I'm sure like lots of other teams have the same issue. You know what I mean?
But for I just good think we teams, watch the it Leafs. Seems like they're behind all the time. Like against Chicago, they're behind and then they
But was
then
that
they
the case
play.
Last year? I actually don't think that was the case last year. Now, that wasn't a great division.
Yeah,
but
well, people have PTSD because they've cheered for this team for so long.
Oh, I do not.
No, I don't either. I cheered for some crappy Canucks teams for a few years and I was like, being a fan is, it's not for me.
All right, James, I think we got time for one more question, so make it good.
You know what I'm going to do? Instead of taking another question, I'm just going to talk about Kyle Beach a little bit and just like how amazing and how powerful him coming forward and talking with Rick Westhead. I know Rick's a personal friend of mine. He's an amazing journalist. He's been working on this story tirelessly all year while his son was in the hospital with cancer. So kudos to Rick for doggedly pursuing that story, but more so kudos to Kyle Beach for, you know, bravely coming forward and putting, I think him, it shouldn't be this way, Jonas, but him putting his face and putting his words out there in the world to his story, I think is going to change a lot of people's minds and it's going to change a lot of the backwards Neanderthal way that the NHL is. And, you know, I just hope that, you know, he gets some solace out of that. And the fact that so much of the hockey world is behind him and, hopefully that more meaningful change continues to happen in hockey.
Well said. And in addition to Rick Westhead, Katie Strang has done unbelievable work on this and she was on the Athletic Hockey Show this week, so be sure to check that out.
Mark Lazarus, Scott Powers, Alex Iniguez is our editor there. Aaron Yeomanson has done a lot of work as well. I mean, like our team has been working on the Blackhawks story a lot and because we believe it's important. And, you know, we have other stories like that we're working on. And, you know, unfortunately, there's a lot of bad things that happen in the hockey world. And, you know, one of the ways that I think that we can change that is by shining a light on it. So we're going to continue to try to do that.
Well said, James. And if you haven't signed up for The Athletic, go to theathletic.com/leafreport. We will be back next week. We'll have a weekend game against Detroit to dissect, James. And then I don't know when we'll do it, before the Vegas game or after the Vegas game.
I think maybe we give it two more games and then, I mean, we'll, yeah, you know, maybe they'll sign someone else or maybe they'll lose 8-1 or who knows what. Maybe there'll be another emergency podcast, but we'll be back soon.
All right. Well, enjoy your weekend. Enjoy the game on Saturday and we'll chat next week. Goodbye, James.
Happy Halloween, Jonas.
Happy Halloween. Yes. Oh, I wanted to tell you, I carved the most amazing pumpkin. I'm very proud of myself. All right.
Tweet the picture and everyone will see it.
No, I'll just send it to you.
And then I'll tweet
Bye.
It.